Second Art Deco Society welcomes you to our Deco Retro program here on Planet FM. We will bring you interesting interviews, updates of future Deco Society and other related events, also book reviews, handy household hints, and other snippets capturing the glamour and fascination of a bygone era. Deco Retro. Deco Retro.
Good afternoon, listeners. I'm Philippa, and joining us on the program today is John Hawkes, the author of New Zealand, Paradise Squandered, Reflections on What We've Lost and Where We're Heading. Born in Christchurch in 1934, John Hawkes graduated from medical school in Dunedin in 1959. A keen athlete, in 1956, he won the New Zealand 440 yards hurdles title and also broke the New Zealand decathlon record. In 1961, he worked his passage to England as a ship's doctor. While an intern at the American Hospital of Paris, he met and married Olga Vladimirovna Rossi, a white Russian refugee born in Shanghai. In 1967, John returned to New Zealand and practiced rheumatology for 7 years. He then returned to Britain and in mid-1974 took up the post of sole consultant rheumatologist at Bedford Hospital near London, a position he held for 25 years and where he observed firsthand the devastating impact on Britain's National Health Service of the free market policies introduced by the Thatcher government from the mid-1980s. In New Zealand, the socio-economic consequences of Rogernomics closely mirrored that of the free market in Britain. Consequences, unfortunately, still with us today. Returning to New Zealand after 35 years overseas was a revelation, and John now felt concerned as to where New Zealand was heading. Following the Christchurch earthquakes in 2011, he and Olga decided to return to Auckland. After extensive research and consultation with well-informed people from all walks of life, both here and overseas, he completed his informative and thought-provoking book, New Zealand, Paradise Squandered. Many of us have come to realize that so much that was good about New Zealand has now been lost to us. Should we follow a different path? Or is it already too late? Is New Zealand now paradise squandered? Published in 2016, Dr. Hawke's book contains a wealth of information about New Zealand, its history and people, and examines some of the problems we now face and also possible ways we can safeguard New Zealand's future economic and social well-being. Now, we're going to talk to John today by telephone. Hello, John. Good to have you on the program today.
Well, thank you very much, Philippa. What a gorgeous day it is in Auckland today.
Yeah, it's fantastic, isn't it? Now, John, you spent 25 years at Bedford Hospital in the UK. What are some of the changes that happened over that time with the National Health Service?
Well, I went through momentous changes, yes. They were mirrored here in New Zealand with Rogernomics. It was Margaret Thatcher and her entourage that brought about the changes. Meant that for the first 15 years or thereabouts of my time at Bedford Hospital, it was a halcyon period, but the last 10 years or thereabouts, I was very unsettled because of what were called the helping strangers, management consultants, who thought they knew what should be done with healthcare.
I see, and then the same thing, I suppose, did happen over here as well.
Much the same. It's argued that Rogernomics was even more vicious than what Margaret Thatcher managed to implement.
Gosh. when you were there, over 25 years, you must have met some very interesting people
in Bedford. It served an area in North Bedfordshire, the county town of North Bedfordshire, Bedford. And in the catchment area, there were about 160 different nationalities. So I fairly rapidly divested myself of the idea that God was an Englishman, etc., and the British was best, and to hell with the rest.
Really? So it was very multicultural.
Yeah, and I enjoyed it because my upbringing was rather difficult from that point of view.
It was a very large hospital?
Yeah, the catchment area, there were about 300,000 people in North Bedfordshire, and it was about 50 miles, the county town Bedford where I practiced, was about 50 miles northwest of the CBD of London.
Yeah, so 25 years, that's quite a length of time. So you must have experienced a lot over that time.
Yeah, I had very good colleagues. They came from many different parts of the world. There were a lot of people from the Indian subcontinent who were very good. They were very bright. And it seemed a bit of a paradox, but they seemed to like England more than the English. And they were mad keen on cricket, and I'm very keen on cricket.
Oh, right. Now, in your book, you refer to yourself as Lucky John. Can you explain this?
Well, I'm Lucky John to be born in such a beautiful country, New Zealand. I was born in 1934 in Christchurch. And when I left my boarding school in Christchurch in 1952, the following year we were the third wealthiest country in the world. And it was perhaps a bit too egalitarian, but it was a very level playing field. It was predominantly a middle-class country.
Wonderful. Even for my childhood, now that I look back, you know. When you did return to New Zealand, how did you find things? You know, you were away for 35 years overseas. How did you perceive New Zealand when you returned?
Well, I couldn't believe the changes. I can't believe the gulf between the rich, super rich on the one hand, and the underclass, particularly here in Auckland, South Auckland, which is predominantly but not exclusively Maori and Pacifica. There are also poor whites there as well. And then Northland, for example, where Dr. Lance Sullivan, I think, has done a fantastic job, and that's been widely acknowledged now. He was the Kiwi Bank. He was awarded the New Zealand of the Year title by the Kiwi Bank in 2014, and he set up Kangar, Well Home, and he enlisted a lot of people in North Auckland, or Kaitaia mainly, but elsewhere, who were intent on trying to improve a lot of the people in that part of the world.
Yes, well, I mean, I grew up a baby boomer, but, you know, for me, since the 1960s, it's sort of amazing the changes over my particular lifetime. So, yes, things have certainly changed. You're critical of the New Zealand media and New Zealand literature, particularly the lack of non-fiction. Is that right?
Yeah, it's a complex question. It's not peculiar to New Zealand, but arguably it's more pronounced here than in most developed countries. For example, Canada, the taxpayer forks out a lot of money to ensure that the Canadians have a critical mass of non-fiction works that celebrate being a Canadian. Otherwise, the argument is that they'll be overwhelmed by American culture. Here, I was appalled to learn, since I've written my book, New Zealand Paradise Squandered, what I was appalled to find is that there's so little money spent on the literature, people that write, whereas in Canada, the government, as I said, provides a lot of money. And as a result, very few New Zealanders seem to have much idea of where we've been, where we are, and where we might like to go.
Yes. Well, it would certainly be a struggle being a writer today in New Zealand, wouldn't it? For some people, anyway. But
yes, again, I discovered since I wrote the book that Horizon Research was commissioned by the New Zealand Society of Authors, and they found the average income of a full-time New Zealand lady writer was $13,500.
That's unbelievable.
For a bloke, it was $12,000.
Oh!
Which didn't really surprise me all that much, but it certainly surprises the people that I ask directly what they think the average or median wages or income for the year. And I get answers of $30,000, $40,000, $50,000, $60,000, if only. I mean, people do well if they write books that about food, about the beauty of the Isles.
Yes.
About rugby, drugby, thugby. Which I, because I
coffee table books.
Nutcase before I met my fabulous wife.
Yes.
Vladimir Rovna Rossi, 15.5 years ago in Paris, where I was working in the American Hospital of Paris. I got there really by accident.
Yes, yes.
Indirectly through the brilliant New Zealand cardiothoracic surgeon, Barrett Boyes.
All right. Now, look, going back to what we were talking about, or you were talking about, you know, nowadays there's very little investigative journalism, and there's certainly a lack of New Zealand content on television. You know, are we in danger of losing our Kiwi identity, including, and also our history? What are your thoughts on this?
Well, I think that there are people much more intelligent than me and have lived throughout most of their lives in New Zealand, whereas you pointed out, I was 35 years abroad. There are quite a few blokes and ladies who have made vehement criticisms of where we're not going. I mean, like Jane Kelsey.
Oh, yeah, she's amazing.
Yeah, well, Jane Kelsey, her book called Fire, The Fire Economy, FIRE being the acronym for finance, insurance, real estate.
Yes, and she's very anti the TPP or whatever it's called now, isn't she?
And then the subtitle of that book is New Zealand's Reckoning.
Yeah.
What I'm fearful of, and this was brought up brilliantly, I think it was yesterday morning only, a very eminent professor of surgery in Christchurch, Professor Philip Bagshaw, you may know, set up a charity hospital in Christchurch.
I have seen that, yes, on television, yes.
And there's a smaller version of it here in Auckland. But he was extremely critical of what has not been done in New Zealand over the since Rogernomic really became embedded in our economy and socioeconomics and so on and so forth.
Yes, yes.
And he made a very valid point, I think, that people do not get brownie points for raising their heads above the parapet. They're very reluctant to criticize for fear of compromising their jobs.
Well, actually, that leads me to my next question, actually, because in your book you mention some of New Zealand's high achievers, you know, including Dr. Lance O'Sullivan, whom you talked about prior to this, but who are some of the other New Zealanders whose achievements you admire?
Well, yes, I was amazed with, as you know, I've spent over 30 years writing this book. I started it in England when I was highly dissatisfied by being held by the so-called helping strangers.
Gosh.
Management consultants, that all the problems of the NHS were entirely to do with the consultants, of whom I was one. Yes, maybe we were a bit complacent and what have you. But no, they destroyed the what had previously been the camaraderie which I benefited from at Bedford Hospital. And a number of my colleagues took early retirement and others took sick leave. I boxed on because one thing I learned in my youth when I was obsessed with sport, as a decathlete in New Zealand, where I broke the record, it was very short-lived, because Roy Williams subsequently broke it and then became the Empire Games champion in Jamaica, the decathlon.
Mm-hmm.
But what I learned was that I had many more failures in my sporting days, because I'd be running 1 minute, then hurdling, jumping, high jumping, throwing the shot put, the discus, and so on and so forth, running a half mile, that you can learn a lot from failure.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, that's how we...
Whereas I was inculcated with the belief that first was first and second nowhere. And the other thing is that 15-month period I had in France was an enormous series of revelations, even epiphanies.
Yes.
My life was turned on its head, and then my wonderful trilingual wife, Olga, has reinforced all those changes. I've just been so lucky. Hence the first chapter of the book, Lucky John.
Lucky John. Lucky John, yes, yes. And you seem to be very lucky with opportunities which opened up to you. You know, you seem to be in the right place at the right time.
Well, exactly, I was. And I mean, the competition was nothing to what it is now. Okay, it was quite difficult to get into medical school, but we were nearly all blokes. When I graduated in 1959 from the Dunedin School of Medicine, there were about 110 of us, and there were only about 8 ladies.
Mm.
Now, I believe for some years, whether it be the Auckland Medical School, which has been going since the mid-1960s, or the Dunedin Medical School, University of Otago, the graduates are predominantly female, and a lot of Asians, and good luck to them.
Yes, I mean, that has really changed, and they say the same with law. Now, you know, there are more women qualifying as lawyers than men now.
Yeah.
Being attracted to law school and...
Well, I mean, when I met Olga Vladimirovna Rossi, she politely said, sports for children, get on with life. And against the odds, I became a consultant rheumatologist. I'm sure otherwise that would have been highly improbable.
Well, it led to you leading a very interesting life and meeting many interesting people.
Well, without Olga, I'd be like a ship without a rudder. But what I feel is, I think sport's very important, but I think it's become so all-important now for many youngsters, whom I'm sure have the innate ability to get a very good trade apprenticeship or get a high-class degree in engineering, mathematics, and the sciences.
Well, I was going to refer back to the 1950s when New Zealand was the world's third wealthiest country. And now, you know, you look at us today as you said before, you know, the growing divide between rich and poor, but also the increasing levels of homelessness. I mean, there's the working poor as well. Sort of what are your thoughts on this? You did express some thoughts earlier on, but... well, can you tell us?
Well, I think that we're all immigrants, including Maori, because the Moriori, as you know, preceded Maori here. And then the Europeans arrived several centuries ago, mainly whalers to begin with. And what I didn't realize till recently was that... when the Treaty of Waitangi was signed in 1840, there were only 2 million Caucasians here in New Zealand. Why I mention it in this context is that individualism was very important, and the so-called number 8 wire man, he came about because that was the necessity of invention in order to cope with anything and everything purportedly, because he could hardly... get advice from elsewhere. Now, that individualism and the disconnectedness that goes with it, which is quarrelsome, the individualism, I believe, is one of our great weaknesses now, having been a great strength, our individualism. Now we need to work collaboratively with one another in order to play the long game, and that's why in my book I've flagged up 3 countries whose population is much the same as ours.
Yes.
Denmark, Finland, and Norway. And they, in my opinion, they're a great blend of capitalism and socialism within an enlightened liberal democracy. And very importantly, they plan long term, and they work together to put their nation's interests ahead of their own.
Yes, well, I mean, it's always been short-termism in New Zealand, hasn't it? With the different government. It's always been short-termism. People don't think in the long term.
Yes, well, that's definitely... it's short-termism, and that is reflected with Rogernomics. And
a quick turnover, quick profit, and you're off.
And this is a complex issue, but many businesses really have to show a very rapid return. It's very difficult for them to play the long game.
And also, I mean, so many of them get sold off and move overseas. That's what's rather sad. They don't stay in New Zealand because I guess we're just not big enough.
Well, yes and no, but I think it's sad that so many of our best brains continue to leave over to go overseas in order to work with a critical mass of like-minded people.
Well,
we've not got nearly enough high-tech, export-led companies, which are sizable middle businesses, middle-sized businesses, and intellectual capital export-led companies. And to think that we're going to increase our wealth for all of us by relying on tourism, which is now our major export earner, is pie in the sky, because as has been shown, and this is in my book, I've got the figures, that's one of the least well-paid jobs and one of the most insecure. And the other thing is that to believe that we can live off grass or off livestock and things, as Sir Paul Callaghan, the late lamented, who's written brilliant books on this subject, it is a fallacy. Because there are so many technological changes now that are overwhelming us, arguably, because unbelievably, you've probably noticed
that
there are now plant-based proteins which replace animal-based proteins. Hence, you don't need livestock to produce dairy products. Or meat.
Yes. John, unfortunately, we're going to run out of time soon. It would be nice to carry on and hear what you have to say about this. But I'm going to have to finish off now. But just the last thing I'd like to ask you is, are you optimistic about our future?
Well, I think there's never been a period in our history, or any history worldwide, where so much knowledge is available because of the digital revolution, and if you do the due diligence.
Yes.
And our priorities, I think, are rather cockeyed. As I said earlier, sport's wonderful, but I think it's out of all perspective.
Well, John, look, it's been great talking to you, and I really enjoyed your book. So thank you for coming on the program today and giving us your valuable time.
Good of you. And as I say, my book, New Zealand Paradise Squandered, Reflections on What We've Lost and Where We're Heading, is, I hope, the beginning of a wave whereby people become a lot more involved in where we've been, where we are, and where we are heading.
Yes. Thank you, John.
Thank you ever so much, Philippa.
Goodbye for now.
Bye.
And now, to end the program, we're going to listen to I Am My Country, sung by Lockwood Smith, and then we'll hear the wonderful voice of Kiri Te Kānawa singing Bailero from Songs of the Aven by Kontaluba.
I am my country like the flag I fly. I will love her till the day I die. My country for eternity, and when the future takes me from my past, and for the shores of home I'd give my last, stand me in waters in a peaceful sea. country like the flag I fly.